along the way has its own momentum that causes other things. And you begin to notice, well, when I was at this stage, this happened. But then when I was at this stage, something else happened. And all of it is a more and more moving into the unknown. Just like love. When you really let yourself fall in love and you've fallen all the way, all kinds of things start to happen that can rightly be called the unknown. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow when you see her. And there's a certain kind of a thrill, a certain kind of excitement in it, a certain kind of ecstasy in it, and there's also a certain kind of trepidation in it, a certain kind of fear about how this can all end up. And it's exactly the same. The master-disciple relationship is a love affair. In every way, and not just metaphorically. I'm not comparing it to falling in love. It is falling in love. It's not a comparison, that's what it is. But it isn't falling in love because the person has certain, the guru has certain attributes, or the teacher is attractive in some way. They become attractive the more you move closer, if that's your fate, let's say. But it's not, I want to fall in love with this one because they have this or that. It's because you're actually falling in love with the truth itself. The guru is simply the manifestation. If a guru is manifest in your life, that's the manifestation of the truth in your life. Because the truth, as an abstraction, can't transform you. You can read about the truth in books, you can look at videos, you can have all kinds of approaches to the truth, but they don't transform you because they're abstract. You can think about it day and night. But that'll just be philosophical consideration. It won't transform you, it won't purify your heart, it won't change your soul. For that to happen, the truth has to be embodied. The truth has to have some non-abstract appearance that you as a human being can relate to. Now, there's the famous example of Ramana Maharshi, another 20th century, considered a saint. And he said, my guru is the mountain Arunachala, located in a certain part of India. And in the West, people said, what the hell is this? How can a mountain be this guy's master? It's hard enough for us to fathom this whole idea of a guru, a master, a true teacher. That's already outlandish enough. Now some joker says a mountain is his master? He's obviously nuts. He's been smoking something. But if your heart is pure enough, absolutely a mountain can be your master. And this mountain, by the way, is revered throughout the world and certainly throughout India as a very holy place. And people report, people who have no spiritual interest of any kind, never have been interested in anything of the beyond, of the truth, are not seekers, report going near that mountain and having just unbelievable transformations, just being there. So it's not a question of the guru, of a person, of a mountain, of a tree. It's a question of how much are you available to the actual truth. And when you're really available, then a mountain can be your guru, then a tree can be your guru. The master-disciple relationship, the guru-disciple relationship, has very little to do with the guru and everything to do with the disciple.
He's sort of creating the guru, isn't it, what do you think?
You can't create the guru. The guru comes through grace. If you could create the guru, you'd be in big trouble. Because you would create the guru that seems good to you. And that would be an ego creation. God help you if you create the guru. So So the guru, the real guru, has to come in objective form, has to be ideally a living flesh and blood human being just like you.